Hey guys, how's it going? It's Mike here. Welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. I'm by myself today. Both Miles and Dave are not well, but thankfully there's plenty of Premier League action for me to talk about this week. However, we can't start this week's podcast without mentioning Luton captain Tom Lockyer, whose awful collapse in the second half of the game against Bournemouth was an awful sight for everyone in football to see. We hear that he's doing okay, that he's recovering, which is great news. It goes without saying, really, that the whole football community, myself, Dave and Miles here at the Football Diary podcast, all extend our best wishes to Tom and his family and wish for a speedy recovery for the guy. And we start this week's pod at the London Stadium, where West Ham beat Wolves 3-0 in a clinical display of finishing, which they really needed to show after the demolition job that Fulham did on them last week, 5-0 turnaround in Fulham's favour. But I think in a game like this, where they come on the back of a 2-0 win against Freiburg only a few days ago, there's a real credit to West Ham's resilience, first of all. And the star of the show, undoubtedly, was Mo Kudus. What a performance from him, and what a player he is. And it's difficult to kind of quantify what Kudus adds to this West Ham side, isn't it? Because he's not a typical David Moyes player by any means, but two fantastic goals on this occasion, and he's in a hot streak right now, isn't he? And as a United fan, Manchester United fan that is, he's kind of the player I wish that we'd signed from Ajax instead of Antony, really. I don't think anyone would have balked at paying 100 million for him, having seen what he's done now, but West Ham got one of the deals of the season by signing him for the amount of money they actually paid for him. And he's a real attacking threat, isn't he? The dimension he adds to West Ham's attack is something that they needed, I think, after some of the players they had last season misfiring for them. Scamacca, probably the one that didn't fit in much with the West Ham system of old. But David Moyes hasn't changed an awful lot to accommodate him, I don't think. He's a player that you've kind of got to let be, and he's off the leash at the minute. He's performing brilliantly. This game was no exception. We can't really mention this performance, though, or that of Kudus, without talking about the performance of Lucas Paquetá as well. His hat-trick of assists obviously helped massively in this case. And he's another player whose maverick nature, I think, is going against what we expect from David Moyes. But I think he's the kind of player that you want to see flourish to elevate this West Ham team beyond what it can be, which at sometimes is tremendously dull. And it shouldn't be. With players like Kudus and Paquetá in the team, they should be firing off performances like this on the regular. So yeah, good to see a 3-0 win for the Hammers. And it climbs them to 8th in the table, believe it or not. They're just behind Manchester United now, who, you know, equally surprising that they're in this position they are on the table too, after they're in different form. But West Ham fans, I'm keen to hear what you think about the way the team are performing this season, because obviously they're still firing in Europe, performing on paper at least, pretty well in the league. 8th place is, if you finished there, you'd be super happy, wouldn't you? And with a couple of players like Kudus and Paquetá in your team, and Bowen as well, who scored another great goal in this instance. A season looks great again for West Ham, doesn't it? Only takes a performance like this to suddenly relive the optimism and to start feeling good again. Mo Kudus, an incredible performance from him, and the key to West Ham winning this game so comfortably, I think. Right, let's talk about Newcastle's 3-0 win over Fulham. A much needed boost after a disappointing Champions League exit in midweek, and a goal, first goal for the club for boyhood fan Lewis Miley, which is always great to see, I think, for home fans, but felt particularly special on this occasion. And the glow on his face in the post-match interview was kind of what football's all about, wasn't it? And really lovely to see. But Newcastle, nonetheless, bouncing back from that disappointment was super important to them. Fulham didn't help themselves, did they, with that clear red card for Raul Jimenez for a really dangerous tackle. Why it even went to VAR in the first place, I don't know. It was an obviously dangerous challenge, really high. But Newcastle capitalised really well. And this is a team that's running on empty in all ways, in all aspects, really. And you kind of wouldn't have known it with the way they applied themselves here. They were kind of ruthless and pushing for more goals, and that push didn't stop until the final whistle. So a vital 3 points for Newcastle, and a vital plus 3 goal difference as well, which is going to be all important in this race for top 4 or top 5, depending on how the coefficients for UEFA pan out, which sadly and ironically Newcastle harmed themselves with really by exiting the Champions League when they did. Clearly Eddie Howe will want to get back into the big time at the first attempt. I think the club and the fans have really enjoyed Champions League nights and what the occasion brings and the prestige and being on the big stage. So he will no doubt want to be in that mix again next season, as soon as that, at the earliest possible attempt. But it's going to be difficult, I think, with the amount of players they've got out at the minute and keeping the team they've got, getting through December and keeping them all fresh and still producing the same sort of energy levels as they've been producing in this game. I think that's going to be really hard for them. But nonetheless, a great display here. A really encouraging last couple of games for Lewis Miley. He looks like such a great prospect, doesn't he? Only 17 as well. And obviously the clinical and the pivotal player that is Bruno Guimarães, once again producing the goods. And so the race for Champions League football next season got even tastier this weekend, really, with some key results happening to change the shape of the way the top four or five looks. First of all, Manchester United drew with Liverpool at Anfield, which nobody saw coming. Manchester City drew with Crystal Palace 2-2, a tremendous fight back there from Roy Hodgson's team with a vital last-minute penalty. And that opened the door for Aston Villa, really, to really cement their place in the top four with a very ill-tempered, shall we say, win over Brentford with the red card for each team and a really spicy end to the game with a lot of controversy and a lot of punishments being dished out to both teams for their actions on the pitch in this game, where players just lost their heads. Six players booked for Brentford, four players booked for Villa, both managers booked, a red card for each team. Yeah, it's a game that had a lot of intensity, to say the least, and including a farcical scene with Emi Martinez and Neil Mopay, where it just looked like, obviously, the occasion got the better of Martinez, him being the kind of character he is, pushed Mopay to the ground. Nothing in it, really, but the way Mopay reacted, clearly trying to get him sent off, was just pantomime stuff, really, wasn't it? But the way that kicked off and sparked off all the scenes that followed, yeah, I don't doubt that will come back to bite both teams, I think, in the next few days. Which is gutting for Villa, because they lose Boubacar Kamara, suspension for this, and he's going to be a difficult player to replace. So how they kind of manage that will be interesting to see. But a 2-1 win here against Brentford is vital. And that man Ollie Watkins scoring against his old club, celebrating in front of their fans as well, which he had to explain at the end was, you know, aimed at a fan in the crowd who was kind of giving him abuse throughout the game. That's had a bit of a mixed reaction as well, hasn't it? Watkins' celebration, because I guess if you've had a good time at a club and they've helped you in your career, you're kind of not really meant to rub it in if you score against them. That's kind of the unwritten rule, isn't it? So Watkins' explanation that he was directing this at one fan in particular, I don't know, what are your thoughts? Do you think that's something you should do? I mean, do you think a pro of his calibre should just brush off that kind of abuse and you know, let his football do the talking, which it did in the end. It got the 3 points for Aston Villa. But I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like he should have just kind of muted his celebration, got on with the job and, you know, gone away from the game, happy just to get the 3 points for his team. But it was one of those games, wasn't it? It was a strange one. But with results going the way they have this weekend, Villa are going to look at this table now and think they're in a really solid position. They're in third place, 4 points above Manchester City in fourth, which is mind-blowing, isn't it? It's unthinkable. Progressing, obviously, top of their group in the Europa Conference League. So things are remaining rosy for Aston Villa. Even when going was getting tough in this game, you know, a really difficult opponent in Brentford, they've actually proven to be more than resolute when they need to be, despite all the beautiful football they've been playing. They can still dig deep and grind out a really difficult, hard-earned 3 points here. And it could prove vital for them, couldn't it, going into this this really tough run of games in December, where fatigue's no doubt going to play a part. Right, so let's talk about Liverpool-Manchester United, shall we? In a game that was kind of only really notable for Diogo Dalot's laughable red card in the 94th minute of the game. A red card that was so unnecessary that even though it didn't affect the game in any way, or it could have done, I guess, it's become the talking point again because the officiating from Michael Oliver was just so, so bad. I think this was a unanimous feeling across football fans when they saw two yellow cards given to Dalot. Yeah, two in the same 10 seconds, I think it was, for protesting too vocally that a throw-in went the wrong way. And it did. The throw-in should have gone to Dalot. It came off Salah, went out for a throw, and it was given in Liverpool's favour. Again, it felt against the way the game was going, it felt like something that Liverpool didn't deserve. So rightfully, Dalot gets angry, gets booked, continues to protest and gets a second yellow within 10 seconds. I think that's where the problem lies with football fans, is that in that moment where the referee's wrong, it just looks spiteful to give him a yellow card twice, doesn't it? I mean, you probably couldn't have argued with one yellow for dissent. You could have understood why Dalot was reacting the way he did, but Michael Oliver's reaction is just petty, and he's got form for it, hasn't he? He did it to Gabriel Martinelli as well, gave him two yellows in the space of, I think, 7 seconds in that instance, and so totally unnecessary, and it just doesn't look great for officials at the minute this season, does it? Really, really poor performance from Michael Oliver. Again, another game where an unnecessarily high amount of yellow cards were given. And in a fixture like this, that's kind of to be expected, but it was laughable, some of the yellow cards that were being given out. But for the game itself, oh, it was a really poor game, wasn't it? Really poor, short of quality, difficult to watch, difficult to play against, I think, for Liverpool. And do you know what? For a United fan, that's music to our ears, because everybody went into this game fearing the worst. Every United fan was predicting a similar kind of fate to what happened to us at Anfield last season, which is, of course, a 7-0 loss, which we won't talk about anymore, ever again. But did we perform well? In some aspects, yeah. I think Rafael Varane's inclusion in the team, it makes it seem ridiculous that he wasn't playing in the last few games, doesn't it? He was the star man for United in a game where it was always going to be a bit of an onslaught. I thought he was the standout defender, definitely. I mean, his organisation and his maturity, who'd have thought that a World Cup and European Champions League winner would have been such a great player to have in your central defence? It's, again, laughable that he hasn't been playing as much until now. But I think he proved a huge point to Erik ten Hag by controlling that back line really well. I must admit, the way we tried to play out from the back a few times scared me a little bit. But holding on to that point is a big step, I think. We played probably as badly in parts as we did in that 7-0 loss last season. But the fact we walked away with a point is a relief, a massive relief. Are we any more optimistic going into the next game? No, not really. Rasmus Højlund did not get a sniff in this game. The ball rarely got up to him. When we had the chance to counter-attack, we didn't really take it. We were so poor at passing. Our pass completion was around 65-70%, something like that. So yeah, an awful game for quality from both sides, to be fair. Liverpool weren't very clinical at all. They had chances to score and didn't take them. So yeah, on reflection, a really valuable point and just a massive sigh of relief for United that this wasn't a massacre that most of us expected. And it opens up the title race, doesn't it? Taking those 2 points off Liverpool means Arsenal suddenly look more in control, means Villa look like they've got a chance. I mean, City kind of are still in the mix in some ways as well. So yeah, movers and shakers, and United being involved in the top four, but not actually part of the top four. But hey ho, that's the new reality of being a Manchester United fan. And next up, I want to quickly look at Chelsea, in particular Cole Palmer and his contribution to Chelsea's season so far. Now, obviously, the Blues have had a ridiculously bad season by anyone's standards, really. I think their last 38 games, if you were to look at them as a season as a whole, they'd be maybe 15th or 16th in the table. It's been that bad. But their business in the transfer market hasn't been great either. And we joked on the podcast last week about Mauricio Pochettino's take on Chelsea needing more signings in January and how laughable that is when they spent so much money. And I think all football fans kind of feel the same. Like, how many players does he feel like he needs? But let's not forget, Pochettino hasn't signed the majority of these players. These are players he's inherited that were bought on big fees with big contracts, as we know, the amortisation process that they've kind of exploited to an extent, which has been changed now since then, funnily enough. But one standout signing, I think, for them has been Cole Palmer. And the difference he's made to Chelsea is brilliant. It's insane, isn't it? He's a player that plays with so much freedom that, yes, you can tell he's been kind of trained in that Pep Guardiola system, but this is what's making Chelsea tick at the moment. Is that important a player at such a young age? And I think he is kind of wasted in this Chelsea team to some extent, because there's nobody on the end of the creativity that he's providing. And Nicholas Jackson is proof of that, isn't he? He's just not the striker we and I thought he was going to be. But Cole Palmer's doing all he can to create that spark for Chelsea. He's been directly involved in 13 goals in his 19 appearances since joining Chelsea. 13 goal involvements in 19 appearances. That's the definition of talisman in some ways, isn't it? That's an incredible return for a player that cost, what was it, £45 million? You can't help feeling that Manchester City might have been a bit naive to kind of let him go for that amount, but I understand the need to balance the books in some ways. But Chelsea will be laughing. This is one of the few transfers, I think, that Chelsea can look at and go, that's first of all an investment, and second of all, it's dramatically improving our team in an area where they need it. So yeah, Cole Palmer, I think he might well be an outside bet for the England squad to go to the Euros next year. And I think if he continue this rich vein of form, there's no doubt that that's deserved either. I don't think he's somebody that wouldn't enhance Gareth Southgate's options for England. Definitely not. As I say, he's just a super creative player and he's done it for England at all the youth levels as well. So why not? You know, there's a few players who will probably be looking over their shoulder at his performances and worrying for their place in the squad, let alone in the first team. So yeah, his influence on Chelsea is magnificent, isn't it? And they beat a pretty poor Sheffield United team 2-0 this weekend. And once again, he was in the thick of the action. So Cole Palmer could be pivotal for Chelsea if they do intend on climbing into the top 10 a little bit further. It's been a stop-start season for them so far, hasn't it? Let's face it. But Palmer, that rare kind of positive sign, that positive signing as well, in a sea of relative mediocrity, it seems. And finally, to end the podcast this week, I'm sure you're all sick of my voice by now, a word on Everton and their remarkable run of, was it four wins in a row now? Their reaction to their points deduction as a team has been fantastic, hasn't it? And I mean, the amount of points they've got, I think it's 16 in the Premier League now. If they had that extra 10 points, they'd be obviously looking at top 10 material, wouldn't they? Looking at challenging for breaking that top 10 and above, who knows? So an amazing job that Sean Dyche has done with a squad that, you know, isn't too dissimilar to last season's that struggled. I know we sort of damn Sean Dyche with a faint praise really sometimes by saying it's the Sean Dyche way and he imposes his style on teams and it's such a recognisable style. But that in this sense, I think, is meant as the biggest compliment, because what the Sean Dyche style is super organised, isn't it? It's everybody doing their jobs really well, no matter what those jobs are. And this Everton team in this game, this was well-drilled, this performance. And Sean Dyche praised the adaptability, as he called it, of some of the players in this team for playing slightly out of position, coming into the team at short notice and making an impact. Players like Michael Keane, who scored in this game as well. James Garner in midfield played brilliantly. Dwight McNeil at wing-back. Adaptability is the key word, isn't it? Where players aren't going to look at these positional changes and shy away from them. And they're riding the crest of a wave of positivity at the moment against the kind of adversity that a points deduction brings. And we were speaking to the Unholy Trinity podcast as soon as this point deduction was announced. And they were adamant that they were unfairly treated in this. And it remains to be seen, doesn't it, whether the points deduction will be reduced. You kind of have to think that it would. But if there's ever been a galvanising factor in a season and in a run of form, clearly this is it. And I don't want to sort of say that this is the only reason that Everton are performing the way they are performing, but it is the biggest reason, definitely. Kind of second biggest reason for that is just Sean Dyche generally as a coach and as a manager and as a person. He's bringing out all his skill set at the moment to keep this Everton team, first of all, getting out of the relegation zone. That was clearly their aim right from the off as soon as that point deduction was announced. But beyond that, making this Everton team difficult to beat, and then finally getting them scoring goals. And that's been difficult too, in a team where Dominic Calvert-Lewin has been in and out of the attacking forward line, where Beto hasn't really stepped in like for like in any way, as he still finds his feet in the Premier League, that's understandable. But it's not just been strikers that have scored the goals, you know. In this occasion, Onana scored from a header. So Onana's been important for them too. The whole midfield has just been an engine for them, hasn't it? And Calvert-Lewin himself hasn't had to score in this game. And that's a sign, really, that they're not dependent on him. And I think that's to Sean Dyche's credit, that he hasn't made this team dependent on one player. You know, this is the definition of a team. Adaptable is definitely the word. They're all playing in positions that they need to play in to keep this team functioning. It's square pegs, round holes in some ways, but the coaching behind it is clear. You know, he's not just putting these players in these positions and hoping. Each of these players that's playing in these positions has a skill set that suits it. Credit to Dyche for making that happen. And I don't know, capitalising on that feeling of triumph against adversity, of proving the Premier League wrong, of uniting against that common enemy of the Premier League. And it is galvanising them at the moment. So well played, Everton. You know, who knows what could be this season, even with that 10-point deduction or whatever the points deduction may end up being. And that is it for today's pod. I'll spare you any more of my voice, but before I go, please do hop over to our YouTube channel. Check us out over there. We are growing as a channel. It'd be lovely to have your subscription added to that and your voice as well. Leave a comment on any of the videos we do. Add to the debate around your team or whoever it is we might be talking about. And just get your voice heard. It'd be nice to interact with fans from different clubs, because that's kind of what we hope to do with this channel. And also, we're on socials at Football Diary UK across pretty much everywhere, so check us out. Until then, speak soon, thank you, and Glazers out as always.